This book here, this is called A Textual Commentary on the Greek New Testament by Bruce Metzger. Bruce was on the committee, and there was Kurt Allen, Matthew Black, Carlo Martini, I don't know who he is, Bruce Metzger, Alan Wickren. Alan Wickren, he's pretty conservative. Kurt Allen is in German, I don't know about him. Matthew Black, I think Matthew Black's from Spain or something. Anyway, this is the United Bible Society's text with this committee. And Bruce has written us some of the thinking that I would like you to express on your test when you evaluate these variants. So writing on this, Bruce says, was it 70 or 72 whom Jesus appointed and sent out ahead of him? The external evidence, meaning the manuscripts, is almost evenly divided. Well, that's what we decided. On the one hand, the chief representatives are the Alexandrian and Western groups, with most of the Old Latin and Sinaitic Syriac, support the number 72. So he said Alexandrian and Western text types support that. On the other hand, other Alexandrian evidence, a relatively great weight, Aleph, Delta, Lambda, etc., as well as Caesarean witnesses, P45, join in support of the numeral 70. So here we have Alexandrian and Caesarean. So rule number 5 doesn't appear to be very conclusive here either. The factors that bear on the evaluation of internal evidence are singularly elusive. Now, so much for external evidence. Rule 1 is divided. Rule 5 is divided. How about internal evidence? Internal evidence is more or less projecting yourself into the variant as to what are the probable things that took place. External evidence is just the face value manuscripts that we have. Where do they lie? Internal evidence is going into scribal habits, what probably happened, doctrinal type things. Does the account of sending 70 or 72 disciples have a symbolic import? And if so, which number seems to be better suited to express that symbolism? The answers to this question are almost without number, depending upon what one assumes to be the symbolism intended by Jesus or the evangelist or those who transmitted the account. In order to represent the balance of external evidence and the indecisiveness of internal considerations, a majority of the committee decided to include the word duo in the text, but to enclose it within square brackets to indicate a certain doubt that it has a right to stand there. In other words, he said that rule 2 and 4 were indecisive in his mind, and rule 1 and 5 were very indecisive. So it was a flip the coin proposition, and they put duo in brackets, not knowing what the answer is. Now that was Metzger. Now on the next page, Alland writes a note. he says, and he looks at it like this. This is somewhat different than Metzger. The concept of 70 is an established entity in the Septuagint and in Christian tradition. The number of examples of 70 in the Old Testament is overwhelming. There are always 70 souls, 70 elders, 70 years. The number 72 appears only once, where amid many other numbers, 72 cattle are set aside for sacrificial offering, Numbers 31-38. Consequently, it is astonishing that the reading 72 occurs at all in 10:1 and 17, and that it has such strong support. Now notice, he brings up how many times 70 is in the Scriptures, and then says, that really is support for 72 as the original reading here. Because it's saying that 72 reflects the least doctrinal bias. So he's giving us Rule 6 and saying this is pretty strong for 72. He's saying it's surprising he even has 72 with all the 70s in the Bible. And it's Rule 2 as well. A reading that in the Gospels has as its support P75, B, and D. If in addition the opposing reading lies under the suspicion of ecclesiastical normalizing, in other words, he says, reading 70, that's ecclesiastical normalizing, meaning they just corrected it to 70 to make it make sense with the rest of the Bible. The testimony becomes irrefutable. Now, Metzger's flipping a coin. Allen says it's irrefutable. This lets you know the critics don't always agree with themselves, which gives us the right on occasion to disagree with them and not feel like we're so far-fetched when they disagree themselves. The opposing witnesses represent entirely an ecclesiastical normalizing. That they are in majority is altogether understandable. If they are ancient, it only proves how early the normalizing process began to operate. For these reasons, 72 should be printed without square brackets. That was his argument. Now, if you're going to say 72 is the original reading, you have to explain why these manuscripts say 70. You have to explain that. He says, ecclesiastical normalizing. Well, these are real early manuscripts. He says, yeah, it took place real early. So he has an explanation as to how these manuscripts became incorrect in the reading. Now, if you choose 70, you have to explain how these manuscripts got 72. Or come up with some type of a probability or conjecture. You can't just say, well, I think it's 72, and I don't know why, and I just flip a coin why. I mean, you could say that, but it wouldn't have a lot of weight. Somebody else could flip the coin and get a different answer.
Couldn't we come up with a term like ecclesiastical
normalizing? Well, that's what Olland used to describe manipulating 72 to number 70 to make it harmonize with Old Testament scriptures.
You don't want it to get so far-fetched. I don't mean far-fetched, but you don't want it to get really elaborate or try to explain it away any other way.
Oh, any way you want. You don't have to say ecclesiastical normalizing. You can just say that the scribal tendency would be to harmonize a number like 72, which is an odd number, into a number that's very common, such as number 70. So you can just say that the probability would be, starting with 72, we can explain how we got 70. Starting with 70, we're going to have a hard time explaining how we got 72. We really are. The only thing we can say is that they added a 2 in there, and it was just an accident. Or we could say, well, they needed the number 12 in there. 12 times 6. There were 6 from each tribe. And Jesus knowing that, and I suppose you could come up with something, but you know, you're getting more far-fetched and that kind of a thing. Now, Metzger has given us the most learned opinion in the world today. Really, this is the most learned opinion of the scholars. He has boiled down what may have been a three-week debate. This may have been a three-week debate. And he has boiled it down into maybe 4 or 5 paragraphs as the kernel of what they really resolved in that meeting. The majority of the committee put this in brackets. Allen dissented and decided it should be this, and the reasons are da-da-da-da-da. So Allen was really leaning heavily on Rule 6, 2, and 4. Go ahead.
have a question. How much support can you throw across the papyri of 1 century older than most of the manuscripts?
Not a lot of weight. Not a lot of weight. There's some weight there, but notice Metzger said the evidence was almost evenly divided. So in an expert's mind, he didn't feel that they really added a whole lot. They supported manuscript B, but it was Aleph ACW 33, which was a pretty powerful witness, against B and some papyrus. He considered that balanced. Just because they're 3rd century didn't mean a lot there when you consider the weight of evidence against them. So, and then rule 5 here, there wasn't anything there that was stand out. So, to us, we might say, well, 3rd century, that's earlier. But we're going to have to admit we're amateurs. And if there was any weight there, Metzger would say so. And he doesn't say so. So I don't think we should say so. In his mind, that's not how they think.
Isn't rule number 6 a type of bias in itself?
It is, but what you're doing is you're projecting yourself back into the scribe's time frame and saying to yourself, would a scribe be biased theologically to change this to this? And if so, then maybe this should get the support of rule number 6.
So you have to put yourself in the mind of the scribe
rather than our own mind. No, the mind of the scribe. And so when we get on doctrinal verses on the Godhead, at the 3rd and 4th centuries, there was some real strife among theologians on the Godhead, so that can start to really mean something.
How would you know what the scribe is thinking, you know, 70 or 72? How do you know what he's thinking?
Well, you don't know what he was thinking, but the tendency, if he was at all a theologian, would be to feel like maybe 70 fits better than 72. All we're saying is that given 25 variants such as this, Rule 6 would probably support 15 of them. Be right 15 times and wrong 10 times. It isn't rule number 6 up there that gives us 72 as overwhelming weight. We've got to make a choice here. UBS basically didn't make a choice. They put duo in brackets, saying we've got to choose, and so we'll put it in brackets, meaning we don't even know if it goes there or not. So this is a real coin flipper on this one. And they put it in there and put it in brackets. So it's kind of like putting it in but not putting it in. Letting you decide. That's how to decide on a variant and leave it open. Go ahead.
I've got a problem with rule number 6. And that, you know, this is where I have a problem, because that, people of that period of time seem to be really having a problem by keeping things clear as far as what God really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctrinal bias really kind of works. The same fine people these days. So how am I going to get past that?
You just have to do your best. We're not saying that Rule 6 is worth 200 points. Rule 1, in my opinion, is worth 200 points. Rule 6 might be worth 22. Might be worth 4. And we've got to stick it in there somewhere. And maybe there's no doctrinal bias here at all. Maybe it was purely... Maybe the original reading was 72 and an ink spot hit the word duo and it got lost in a few manuscripts. I mean, maybe that happened. It could be a lot simpler and we could be making it real complex with all this theological ifs and ats and, you know. But we don't know, so we just have to do the best we can. You just have to do the best you can. You have to look at the balance of probabilities, make a judgment. In my opinion on this one, textually, I like 72. Theologically, I like 70. For lack of anything better, I'd probably stick with the King James. Go with 70. I'd probably give it a 70 and maybe give it a D rating. I like 70. I like round numbers. there are a lot of 70s in the Bible. Why not have one here?
Does any English have 72?
What do you mean, English? Does NAS have 72? Anybody have NAS here? I don't see NAS on the back wall. I don't know if any do. There's a probability that some of them do. Some of them seem to be quite rebels. And they usually like to pick variants away from the King James to exert their independence. So I would probably suspect that you could find some that have 72.
This is kind of an abstract question. There's obviously a lot of subjectivity in manuscript.
Yes. Subjectivity. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you deal with it? Do you add more to it? Do you try to see around it by some kind of reason? Do you...
You go by your gut feeling. You learn as much as you can and get as much experience as you can, study as much variance as you can, and you go by your gut feeling. And don't try to be stubborn either. Go, take a good look at what Metzger has. I don't like to disagree with Metzger. The more I agree with Metzger, the more credibility I have. Because Metzger's pretty much speaking for, you know, quite a large group of people here. And but there's some times when I'm going to have to disagree with Metzger's. I just don't like his thinking. But I want to have good thinking for those type of things. I want to have better thinking than he has. Mm-hmm. So we're just kind of dipping our toes in here, but we'll keep looking at these variants. This one here is a real... You know, a real difficult one to decide. There's not a whole lot to go on. And you can argue either side. In fact, did I tell you about John 1:18? Among the teaching staff, we got into a debate on that with the pastor. And there were about 7 or 8 on the committee. And 3 on the committee supported Only Begotten Son. And 5 on the committee supported Only Begotten God. In John 1:18, there's a variant. And we generated 100 typewritten pages of argument for Son, and it's probably the same for God. Spent probably 20-some hours on it as a group, hammering it out and arguing back and forth. And at the end of the session, there were 5 that agreed with Only Begotten God and 3 that agreed with Only Begotten Son. Only Begotten God was led by Rule 1 and 2, and the others were going by Rule 7 and some other things. So we'll look at that reading. That was interesting.
Is that available, Pastor?
We had a big report on it. It's in the grad library. So you can read all about it there. Let's look at another variant here. I'd rather put that one off till later. We'll study it a little later. Let's look at John 3:13. John 3:13. Whenever you do any textual study, you probably always want to read this commentary just to make sure you don't miss anything that Metzger's thinking and any argument that he comes up with. John 3:13, page what, 329? What's the King James say here? There's a brother who's getting the King James right back there. Let's hear the King James.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and read the King James.
And no man hath ascended up to heaven, but he that come down from heaven, even the Son of Man which is in heaven.
Even the Son of Man which is in heaven. UBS has chosen the reading, even the Son of Man, period. Even the Son of Man, period. P66, 75, Aleph, B, L, W, S, U, P, P, 33, by the way, they give this a C rating. Then another reading. Even the Son of Man, the one in heaven. Ho'on en to hurano. The one in heaven. That is read by the King James. And what manuscripts is the King James basing that on? A, K, Delta, Theta, Pi, and Psi. What does A asterisk mean? Asterisk B-I-D. Notice in little parentheses there, A asterisk B-I-D, omit own. Well, A asterisk means original hand, omits own. AC has it. AC means there's a corrector of the manuscript. Now, A is dated what? 425? The scribe copied manuscript A in 425. A corrector, sometime later, could be 6th century, could be 10th century. I don't know what the date of this corrector is, has added that little Greek word own there. It's not really changed the meaning of it at all for us in English. And the original A has omitted that particular Greek word. And see, all of this, I'm just telling you what these means. It doesn't really affect our variant at this point. VID means the shape of the manuscript is such that they can't really tell for sure. VID means there's ink on the page or a tear or something. Then, that's not the only variant, though. You read down here and we come up with a third variant. Of man, hos en to hureno, which is Son of Man, the one who was, ain is was in heaven. That's read by Italic manuscript E, Syriac manuscript C, and the Syriac Palestine. That reading, the one who was in heaven, you can see that's probably a real theological ad lib to make sense out of this. I'm not even going to write it up here. No manuscript support, really. Then the last reading, Son of Man, the one out of heaven. Manuscript 01-41-80 and the Syriac, manuscript S. The one out of heaven, again, you can see that's a theological ad lib. No real manuscript support, so I won't write that one up here either. Now, that's the evidence that we have written out. How do you know the English for this part here, if it's not in the purple interlinear? Well, you turn to the King James interlinear. That's called the Englishman's Greek New Testament in the library. It's the Stephanus text of 1550 that has an interlinear. And it will almost always have the rejected readings of Westcott and Hort, so you can get the Greek out of those. So it has all of this in there, in the Englishman's Greek New Testament. just another book in the library. Look it up. If worse comes to worse, you might look the words up in a Greek dictionary. So you can find your way around. Ask an older student. Now, what's the date of B66 and 75? Third century, Aleph. 375. B, 350. Better know that for the quiz. What's WSUPP mean? Well, looking at the index in the front of UBS.
Portion of the manuscript supplied by a later hand.
Yes, portion of the manuscript supplied by a later hand. Supplied by a later hand. How much later? We don't really know, but it takes away a lot of the weight of manuscript W. So let's scratch W off here, since that's not really going to be something we can use at this time for support. And manuscript A is 425, we said. Anyway, it's rule one goes here. Not so much, let's look up some of the dates of those other uncials that are here with the one in heaven that go with manuscript A. How about K? What's the date of K? Delta, theta, pi, and psi. What's the date of K? Got your little thing there.
Ninth century.
How about delta?
Ninth century.
How about theta? Pi?
9th century.
C?
That's 8th or 9th.
8th or 9th century. So these, not as weighty, basically we're here with A, 5th century. Yeah. Now, rule number one, because A is the only early one that's here, we have a grouping of older ones there. Rule number one does support this. Again, it's not overwhelming, but it does go here. The more difficult reading is obviously this. Can you explain to me why it's the more difficult reading?
The outline means of man.
Yeah. Even the sun. Of man. This is man. Anthropos. And it's just possessive of man, that's all.
Commonsensically.
What?
Just commonsensically man from heaven. Does it make it more difficult?
What makes this more difficult is even the Son of Man, the one in heaven. I mean, the one in heaven, you're standing right there on earth saying this, even the one in heaven. That's what makes this a difficult reading. It's almost a nonsensical statement. Even the Son of Man, the one in heaven. Which one in heaven? He's not in heaven now. What does Jesus mean by that sentence? That is a difficult statement, not only theologically, it's a difficult statement all around. What's he mean? By the way, it's not a matter of oneness Trinitarian. Trinitarians don't know what this means. You know, the shortest reading, well, it's not a matter of the shortest reading. We're talking about a whole clause here, so you can't just use that. Rule number four. I don't know that rule number four really applies. This doesn't explain the origin of this or really vice versa. What we've got is a difficult reading, and maybe you could omit the whole thing and solve the problem. Least doctrine of bias. I don't see any doctrine here. Tenor of the whole. I think they both support the tenor of the whole. You know, even the Son of Man, the one in heaven, I mean, that's not contrary to the tenor of the whole. Tenor of what? Which doctrine are we talking about? You know, let's read what Metzger has to say on this. He'll tell us about rule number five, too. On the one hand, a minority of the committee preferred the reading, even the Son of Man, the one in heaven. A minority of the committee preferred this reading. What were their arguments? Number one, if the short reading supported almost exclusively by Egyptian witnesses, Alexandrian text type, rule five, almost exclusively by Egyptian, if that were original, there's no discernible motive which would have prompted copyists to add the words, the one in the heaven, resulting in a most difficult saying. If this is the original, who would add that? That results in a most difficult reading. Number two, the diversity of readings implies that the expression, the Son of Man, the one in the heaven, having been found objectionable or superfluous in the context, was modified either by omitting the participial clause or by altering it so as to avoid suggesting that the Son of Man was at that moment in heaven. Now that is the argument for this. It's based on Rule 2, and it's saying, if we had this as the original, whatever got into somebody to write that down there? Five lines left if it's a whole discussion. On the other hand, the majority of the committee, impressed by the quality of the external witnesses supporting the shorter reading, regarded the words, the one in heaven, as an interpretive gloss reflecting later Christological development. So this side is saying, well, the reason they went to this is because nobody could make sense out of this. This side is saying, oh, that's an interpretive gloss from later Christological thought. That's where that came from. You have to be able to conjecture where this came from if you're going to say this is the original meaning. And that's what they say. And the majority of the committee favored this, so UBS has this as is with the C rating, some degree of doubt. That's the argument. Metzger didn't give us a lot of discussion on that. He gave us a lot more discussion on 72. He gave us two pages on that. On this, which I consider to be a much more interesting variant, he gives us, hardly a half a page. So, I prefer even the Son of Man, period. I agree with Metzger. I go by rule number one here on this one. However, if I get to heaven and John tells me that he wrote the one in heaven, I'm not going to be surprised. Because there may be some type of a spiritual truth there that may have caused everybody to fall all over themselves and maybe want to scratch that clause from the text. Let's propose, even the one in heaven. I wonder if that has a spiritual meaning. Suppose we say that is the original. How do we interpret that? We could say that that was a statement made in anticipation or speaking ahead of time. As in John 17, he said, I am no more in this world. So we could say it's one of those type of statements where Jesus is just speaking an enigma of, what's going to happen in the future. Or maybe he's talking about a spiritual thing that even the Son of Man, the one who maybe is walking in heavenly places or whose spirit is in heaven or who is experiencing things, or maybe there's some kind of interpretation we could put on those words. Not that they mean that as a human being he was walking around in heaven, which he obviously wasn't, but maybe there's some spiritual meaning to it, that his spirit was in heaven, or in communion with heaven, or in communion with God. I mean, maybe there's some kind of meaning to it that we've missed. I don't know. Maybe we'll understand some more. And the book of John, isn't the book of John noted for some unusual sayings? And so, the fact that this is in the book of John, at least it's in the book of John and not in the book of Matthew, it's kind of in harmony with some of the things John wrote. enigmatic things. So maybe it's one of those sayings that Jesus intended us to spiritualize and get a lot of truth out of. I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where I'm going to decide on UBS's decision, but I'm going to leave the door open for the other, and I don't want to miss any spiritual truth. So if I get any out of the other, I might be swinging back towards that. If the Lord comes down and gives me a really super interpretation of this, brother, my mind's going to change quick. But in the meantime, I'll probably go with this. So I'm admitting my own subjectivity to anything God might reveal in the future. That's my feeling on it. And should I decide on this, at least I have a minority of the committee on my side. At least I'm not way out in left field all by myself. I mean, I don't want to appear openly dishonest and biased. So I just want to go by, you know, what's probably best. But in the meantime, you know, we'll probably prefer this. I'm not that dogmatic. Notice UBS isn't that dogmatic on this. A C rating certainly isn't being very dogmatic. They're admitting there's an argument for the other.
Brian,
go ahead.
I have a question that has nothing to do with anything, but who supports these people? Are they college professors and whatnot that are?
Well, Metzger.
Much time to be involved in committees.
They are. First of all the Bible societies have paid staff that's supported by the Bible Society. So Metzger works out of the New York Bible Society. He's paid staff on the Bible Society. He's also paid staff on the non-sexist Bible coming out. He's also a professor at Princeton University. He's taught for years. So he's got it. And then no doubt he could lecture at a lot of places and command a good fee. So, and then I don't know about Allen, but I suspect he's probably a professor at Münster University in German or something like that. I mean, who knows? These guys are almost all professors at some university, scholars, and then having developed their scholarship at some university and writing books and that kind of thing, they then have hired on at the Bible societies, either volunteer or other paid, to do work like that. Allen, he is, I think, the one in the world who collates these manuscripts. Any new manuscripts that are found, he would be the one that would collate it, and he keeps a master list of all the manuscripts. And so, some of these, I don't know much about Black and the other guy. Alan Wickren, I know he's a U.S. citizen that has lectured at, I think he's a conservative. He may be a Baptist, I don't know. But he's pretty well known, pretty well respected. So, and they've undoubtedly solicited opinions of other men. F.F. Bruce might be a man they would solicit an opinion from. There's a number of other people. There's people that have written books.
Kind of people we could ever go here speak, make them understand.
Oh, I think so. In fact, Russ McKenzie, I think, has gotten a letter from Bruce Metzger before. He wrote him a couple questions on some things and got an answer back. I know we've gotten answers back from the New York Bible Society, probably from assistants of Metzger. But I think we've actually gotten a letter back from him, too. But I don't have to check with Russ on that. But there's numerous volunteers and assistants and other lesser-known people who do a lot of the kind of answering questions type of thing. They get a lot of inquiries on a lot of things. So I can't remember. I think Russ wrote him a letter on how much consideration they give to these people that think the King James is inspired. And, you know, something to the effect of poo-poo. We don't even take them seriously. We can consider them crackpots and fanatics. Kind of like the medical profession takes the health food industry. They consider them crackpots and fanatics and don't pay much attention to them. So, go ahead.
Yeah, Lenny, you said that a good text to use in order to get the English so we understand what we're looking at, the different variants, would be the Englishman and Greek text, New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Englishman's Greek New Testament.
And what is the Jehovah Witness interlinear basis?
Westcott and Hort. The purple interlinear is Westcott and Hort text, which is very close to UBS. Very close. Let's look. Any questions on this?
What was the name of that other book you were reading your comments on?
This is called A Textual Commentary on the Greek New Testament. This is written by Bruce Metzger, a companion volume to the UBS Greek New Testament. It's based in the third edition. So this is supposedly their thinking. The present volume is designed to serve as a companion to the third edition of UBS Greek New Testament. One of the chief purposes of the commentary is to set forth the reasons that led the committee, or a majority of the members of the committee, to adopt certain variant readings for inclusion in the text and to relegate other readings to the apparatus, meaning reject other readings. On the basis of a record of the voting of the committee, as well as, for most sessions, more or less full notes of the discussions that preceded the voting, the present writer has sought to frame and express concisely the main problem, committee's evaluation, and so forth. Talks about other things in here. Yeah, this is for sale also. And another $10 item for your library. Go ahead.
Regarding the subjectivity that everybody obviously had in this area, is it possible, is there a tendency in it, like for one individual to put more weight on the external evidence?
Yes, definitely.
Is it real clear cut as far as who does what?
Well, I don't really know, because I don't know which of these men decided what on any given variant. But and that has been said of certain textual critics throughout history. We haven't studied the history of textual criticism yet, but there are certain men who are famous in textual criticism back in the 1700s, 1800s, and some of them are said to be very subjective because they were Bible commentators. Others are said to be more liberal and less theological, and so that affects their thinking. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's very theological. I think he's very liberal. Being liberal doesn't really mean that his decisions would be to be rejected. Actually, five unsaved men could do a very handy job of the textual criticism of the New Testament, treat it like a secular work. Textual criticism goes on in the secular world all the time, so there's no reason why they can't apply the same principles to the New Testament. Come up with a very good text. Well, they wouldn't be able to apply that principle. Although they may be familiar with theological thinking, being not theologians, and still apply it. Because they would probably apply it. Let's look at another variant here. By the way, there have been some men who aren't Christians that have done this. We'll study them later. Let's see here. I don't know that they were. Little difference, very little difference. Let's look at this one. This is a theological one that's real interesting.
How much time have we got? Maybe we've got enough minutes for this. John 17:11. Let me write it as it's written in the text. John 17:11. Ho dedokas moi.
Sure.
which you gave me. Which you gave me. P60VIV. What's the date of P60? What?
Third
century. VID means the state of the manuscript is such that complete verification is not possible. So there's some of a question as to what this really reads. So then there's...
7th century.
What?
It says 7th century.
7th century? Okay, 7th century. Then P66. Okay. Then Aleph, L, and W, instead of having it in the perfect case, that's imperfect. So Aleph, L, and W, we know L is 9th century by now. W is 5th. This is 375. Then we have A, B, C, delta, theta, pi, etc. There. Minuscules, lectionaries, a few fathers. Then we have ho, didocus, moi. Basically, we have, instead of masculine, we have neuter there, the article, which doesn't change a whole lot. Manuscript D and Chi. We'll put manuscript D on here. Same thing, D. Then we have Us. Us means those. Those you gave me, that stays the same. Didocus moi. That's read by D, corrector B, which date we don't know, 892 VID, and some other minuscules, etc. Then we have omit. It looks like they omit a whole thing. Versions and fathers, but no Greek manuscripts, so let's just let that go. Won't even mess with that. So it basically boils down to which keep them in thy name, those you have given me. Then we have keep them in thy name, which you have given me. Now, theologically, we're making a big difference here. What was given to Jesus? Those, which refers back to the men, antecedent the men, keep them, those, or keep them in thy name, which you have given me. All of a sudden, it's the name he's given him. The name you have given me. NAS translates it, keep them in thy name, the name, you gave me the name which you've given me. They repeat the name to make it certain. Rotherham has it, keep them in thy name which you have given me. That's just real literal. So there's a big theological difference here as to what this verse means on this variant. And theologically, keep them in thy name, the name, your name, which you've given me, Yahweh the Savior, to bear. Of course, that harmonizes with what we understand about the name Jesus being Yahweh the Savior and the name you've given me to bear. We don't have any problem with this verse. In fact, there's even some good revelation in this verse. This verse, keep them in thy name, those you've given me, doesn't really say anything theological other than, you know, I'm praying for these men. Now, rule number one is pretty solidly right here. Real solid.
Which one does this apply to?
Which is both whole and this. This is just neuter. This is masculine. Those is ous. So actually, the first couple of readings all really have which. They just have different. The more difficult reading. Well, there's nothing difficult about this. So maybe two goes here. You can't say this is a difficult reading. Keep those whom you've given me. But whereas this may be a difficult reading. Just depends on who you are and what your theology is. The shortest reading may not apply. Best explaining the origin of the other reading, well, it's hard to know. Rule number five, I think we'd have to say rule number five goes here, just because there aren't any manuscripts down here. So whether we know anything about it at all, it goes there. Doctrinal bias goes here. Tenor of the whole, they both fit the tenor of the whole, there's no problem with that. Keep those in thy name, obviously that fits the tenor of the whole. Let's see what Metzger says about this. This one might even get Metzger pushed. Depends on his theology. Metzger denotes, I consider this to be a highly interesting reading. Metzger denotes 11 lines to this. That's all he wants to say to it. The reading that best accounts for the origin of the others has also the strongest attestation. So he puts rule 4 here. The origin of the others. The difficulty of Ho, which is read by P60, P66, Alt, A, B, C, W, Delta, etc., etc., prompted some copyists to replace the dative. All right, this is dative. With the accusative. Or with the plural ous. The latter correction could also have been prompted by the recollection of verse selection, the statement in 18.9. The omission of one or more clauses from several ancient witnesses may be due to difficulty of original reading or maybe accidental. He didn't even talk about the theology of it. He didn't even talk about it. He may not even notice the theology of it. That may be how far he is from theology. He still gives it a C rating. And in my mind, I have no question as to what the original is here. I'm real dogmatic on which. I feel like that's without question. Go ahead.
How do you know which version is NAS and which version is King James?
Because I've read the versions on this variant. Memory. Go ahead.
Is this because some of these were discovered after they already did the King James version?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Remember we said the King James did not have A, B, C, W, any of the papyri. They only had manuscript D, and they didn't use that very much because they were a little bit afraid of it. So, this yes, the King James basically had used all that they had. They didn't have any bias towards the King James. They did all they could do. They just had very limited, in 1611, they had very limited textual, what we have today. If King James was made today by the same men, they'd come up with basically what Metzger's come up with. They were more spiritual men, but they follow the same type of thing. Go ahead.
Why is that considerable doubt? Why did he give a C?
He doesn't really tell us that in here. And I don't know why. It may be that they consider that a difficult reading. And in a sense, they consider it maybe too difficult. And so they feel like you'd think it would be an A rating, but in their minds it's a C rating. It's still a variant that's difficult. It only means that a real A rating is one that's just a lead pipe cinch in their minds. So they still consider this to be somewhat questionable.
So with having that in relation, you give it a much higher rating?
Well, I don't know if I give it a higher rating. I just feel a lot more confident with it. I mean, I'm and not because I'm unfolding Rev, necessarily. I just think the apparatus is starting. Go ahead.
Can you explain the rule again? The more difficult the reading, the more closer it is to the original text?
a more difficult reading probably changed to a clear reading than a clear reading changed to a difficult reading. So the more difficult reading is probably what the scribe really wrote. Because copyists would tend to change that to something else.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Some of these Jewish scholars from, say, Germany go through all this and